The following podcast is a part of RadioMisfits.com.
Hello and welcome to Misfits Making It. We're oddballs and we're doing cool stuff. I'm your host, Lauren Lojudice. This is the podcast version of the comedy shows I host around New York City and the road, the Misfit Variety Show, and all the shows at the Capiche Club Misfit Comedy Space down in Little Italy. Well, how's it going? What's up in your Misfit world? I am about to go to Denver Fringe. Hooray! I'm so excited. It's going to be so fun. I've heard wonderful things about this Fringe. It's a smaller Fringe. Denver is not quite the same as like Edinburgh and all that, but it's a growing community and good vibes. My God, it's so well organized. Yeah, that's just such a relief when you're looking to go do something like this. And I'm going to bring my hour. Yes, I have an hour. I did a Fringe Festival 2 years ago, and now I have revamped it, renamed it, restructured it. It's all new. Ancestry.comedy, a stand-up hour for Misfits. And I'm really excited to see how it plays out there. And I'm going to end up doing 30 minutes of it when I get back to New York City at Cuckoo's Open Mic, which they have a feature spot. And I'll probably film it. Clips coming soon. Y'all see some stuff up online for sure. It's a new adventure, new fun. And I'll have to let you know how it goes. All right. Before we get into today's interview with Mark Weiser, reminder, please rate and review the podcast because social proof is super important for Misfits because Misfits trust other Misfits to know what's good. Also, you could sign up at laurenloji.com for monthly updates on the podcast and all things like the Denver Fringe, which I'll let you know how it goes. Or you can also sponsor a podcast. We make it accessible for individuals, also more companies. Go to Lauren Loji, click on listen and podcast and contact us there. All right. Today, we are talking to Mark Weiser, who is the mastermind behind Shake, Rattle, and Roll's Dueling Pianos. We met many moons ago, and then I was seeing Jackson Sturkey, who is the diva of Cuckoo's Open Mic, and he was doing a cabaret with an entertainment company, and I came in, saw it, and then behind me, someone is Lauren. And there it is, Mark Weiser of Shake, Rattle, and Roll Pianos, who will talk about how he met many moons ago, very drunk on a cruise where he was doing his dueling piano act. And you never see anything like it. He gets the whole crowd rocking, and he has grown this thing into be all over the country. They're doing shows every day, all the time, and his relentlessness makes this interview a must listen for anyone who is doing, anything, any sort of endeavor in which you're trying to do something special. Well, Mark has created something truly special his own way. And with all of the rocks and rolls of the shake, rattle and rolls of the entertainment industry and the world, he keeps it going, man. Nothing will stop Mark. I'm positive of that. And I think you're going to be really inspired. So let's go on and get to the interview with your friend and mine, Mark Weiser. Hello, Mark Weiser. Thank you for joining us in Misfits Making It.
Hey, I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. We met many moons ago. Very drunk.
back in the days before fire. Yes.
Yes. Back in the days before fire. And a cruise that I was on with my family, and you were having a huge family reunion and you were jamming it, dude.
Yeah. About 15, 20 years ago, I was working as a feature performer for Carnival Cruise Lines, where I was for about 4.5 years. And it was a blast. I loved it. It was a great period for me. I've been a performer most of my life, but that touring life was a lot of fun. Cruise ship life is not for everybody, but you know, for certain kinds of folks, it's a great place to perform. It's a great way to live. You get to save all your money. You get to cruise around the world and see great places and meet all sorts of interesting people and do work that you love. And you get a captive audience of thousands and thousands of people every week. It was really exciting. I'm glad now that I'm older to be sleeping in my own bed on land. But it was a great time for me, and it was a lot of fun. And I got to meet people from all corners of America, all over the world. And it helped me build my show as a performer. It's a great place to be tested because you don't have a band. You don't have other people to lean on. It's you on stage alone for hundreds of people a night for 4 hours straight, sometimes 6 hours straight, if I remember correctly. And you either sink or swim. That's a terrible metaphor for a cruise ship. Sorry. But you either, you know, stand or fall on your abilities as a performer. So it's a great place to really be thrown into the fire and see what kind of performer you really are. It was phenomenal for me.
Also, as you were doing it, I was like, this guy is smart, because I noticed you had a pad for an email list at every single show.
Oh, yeah. I mean, listen, you know, marketers, performers, you have to be your own best marketer. You have to be your own best ally. You know, one of the greatest things I was told as a young performer is this is show business. So if you only focus on the show part and neglect the business part, your career is not going to go where you want it to go. So for me, when I was cruising, again, I have no support staff. I have no interns. I have no assistants. The way that I built up my mailing list and built up my marketing was to have that little notebook that I sent around the room every night so that people that wanted to stay in touch could put their email addresses in. And I do that to this day at our dueling piano shows. All of our request slips have name and email on them so that we are growing our mailing list at every show I do. Now we're about 11,000 people on our mailing list. The list that was started when I met you way, way, way back.
Yeah. We're going to give that clown horn. It's amazing. That, and you were like, also you had recorded something too. You have recorded a show.
So, I recorded a bunch of shows then. I wanted to have my own merch to sell. And I was never big on like t-shirts, keychains, hats, all the little tchotchkes that people do. But I did feel like selling a CD that was representative of the live show experience that I had with these people, I thought that would be a nice memento for people to take away. So over the course of one of my tours, I set up some mics and some digital recording equipment under the stage, and I recorded almost every single show that I did on that tour, weeks and weeks of shows. And then when I got back home to New York, I went back through all of them and cut together what was like an hour long CD that felt like one live show, where if you're listening to it, it feels like you're there in the audience at one of my solo shows. And so that was a way to capture the live show experience and then be able to relive it at home rather than just do a studio recording or any of those things, which are great.
Sure.
But I'm not a recording artist. I should have muted that. Sorry.
You know, well, we'll get to that. You're like very busy right now.
As you can see, the 24-hour day. So I always felt I did my best as a live performer in the room with people. And that was the experience I thought served me best as something to give to fans and customers. So that was the CD I recorded, which I still have to this day somewhere.
Awesome. And wait, so let's talk about what your live show was, because I think people need to understand the experience, because people want to take that home with them. That is that's the thing that they want with
them. So I am a piano bar entertainer. Now I'm a dueling pianos performer, but I also still do solo shows. So what I did for Carnival was a solo piano bar show, which was, as a New York performer, it's a mix of music and comedy and crowd interaction. It's an all request show. So it's never the same twice, which is good if you like variety. And if you are a performer like me that kind of has this bottomless reservoir of songs, it's also good if you're ADD. So, hey, it's the kind of show where on a cruise where it's a 7-day experience, you can come back night after night after night and have an entirely different guest experience, which is something that was important to me. So that is the same thing that I do now in my dueling piano shows that we do here based in New York, but we're all over the world, where it's still an all request show, and it's still very heavy on interaction and on maximizing the crowd experience, where it's still a strong mix of music and comedy, and the audience is the star of the show, which they've always been throughout my career.
And how do you do that? How do you bring
we put out these request slips all around the room, and the guests are writing down their favorite songs in real time and bringing them up to us, so that we, at the start of the show, have no idea where the show is going to go as we're starting it. And with a resource of 5,000 songs, plus nowadays with the internet, you can sight read or play literally anything. We don't know what we're going to be doing in an average show. You know, this past weekend, I had to play Journey and Chapel Roan and Defying Gravity and, you know, Britney Spears and the Backstreet Boys and Billy Joel, and the list goes on and Snoop Dogg, and you never know. And it's as fun for the audience as it is for me, because it's always fresh, it's always new, and I never know at the end of one song what the next piece of paper is going to be. And so we try to be high energy ringmasters and kind of weave this fun show together. And rather than just be a jukebox that's playing song, 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 try to weave an evening together that has a beginning and a middle and an end, and sort of takes the audience, this is sort of a theatrical term, but sort of like on a journey, you know, where there's this kind of arc, a shape to the show. And there's emotional beats, emotional resonance to what we're doing. It's not just playing people songs, but it's really connecting the songs and the comedy to the audience in the room. And I think that's why the show is as successful as it is, because people leave there really having had this great connective experience, where we start the night with 150 strangers. And at the end of the night, everyone's got their arm around each other. They're all singing along. They're buying each other drinks. They're dancing together. People are making social media connections. And it's magical for us to see as performers this sort of night after night after night feeling of bringing, you know, I don't want to be wishy-washy about it, but bringing all these people together through music. That's what got me started as a performer when I was a teenager, which was a month ago. Still keeping that love of show alive, because it's always great and it's always new and it's always fresh. And that doesn't take anything away against my all my theater friends who do great work on Broadway and off-Broadway and touring. I could never be someone that does the same show every night. It would drive me bananas. It's the same reason I can't wear a tie. I can't work in an office. Like I would die inside doing the same thing over and over. And when I found this career path, it was like the sun coming up. It was like fireworks. It was a connection to a kind of show and a kind of life that really suited who I am as a person and as a performer.
Well, let's talk about how you found that, because so many people have like creative passions and they're like, where do I begin?
So I started performing here in New York when I was 16. I the short version of the story is that my first performances, my best friend in high school and I were kind of a little musical duo that we put together. And neither of us were very good, but we loved music and we loved rock and roll and we had a passion for performing. And he dragged me to an open mic night in Midtown on a Tuesday night. And we got up and we played and we were terrible. And the rules of the open mic were you got two songs. And if you were good, the host kind of tapped you on the shoulder and let you do a third song. The first night we were terrible. And I thought, okay, we've done it. We're done. And my friend David was like, all right, that was great. We're coming back next week. I was like, wait, what? He goes, we're coming back. So I was, okay. So we went home. We learned two new songs. We came back the next week, week number two. And we played our two songs. And we weren't terrible, but we weren't great. And we looked over at the host, whose name was Johnny. And he's like, hey, you know, thank these guys. Thank you. Next. I was like, oh, all right, we're done. And Dave was like, no. One more. We're going to do one more. We're coming back next week. We're going to do it. I was like, okay, we'll do it one more. And we went home and we learned two new songs. And we came back the third Tuesday. And at this point, The room was familiar. The people were familiar. The sights, the smells, the sounds was all the same. And my brain could ignore all the stuff that was new and shocking and jittery and focus on actually trying to put these songs over. And we did the two songs. And then Johnny came up and kind of tapped us. And he was like, all right, so what are we doing for the third song? I was like, we did it. We got the third song. I mean, it was, you know, it was like our 16-year-old version of Showtime at the Apollo. Yeah. And then like a horn section appeared out of nowhere. And they asked us what we wanted to play. We hadn't prepared a third song. So we called the song. And the sound of the audience kind of clapping, I still hear it to this day. And I came off stage and that was it. That was it. I was hooked. And then since I was in New York, and New York is very rich with piano bar culture and with theater, it was easier for me to find, as I grew and got through college, places to play, places to network, places to perform. I had apprenticed through college and through my early 20s, for a number of different kinds of companies. I knew before I left high school that I was going to be a music performer for life. So much to the chagrin of my family, I didn't go to law school. I didn't go to med school. I had no umbrella. I had no safety net. Mm-hmm. I kind of went all in, which I find is a common thread for successful performers. I don't know why that is. I don't necessarily recommend that for everybody, but if in your heart, you know, this is where you're meant to be, commit to it. So then I spent a summer working for a record label. I spent a summer working for a music publisher. I spent a summer working for a music house that did music copying, which is now a dying art because computers have taken over. But it allowed me, while I was in college studying music, a real world education that, again, brought me the business side of show business. And I was able to see the industry from the inside, from how the music business really worked. I'd worked in bars since I was 16, so I knew how live music events were structured. I got to apprentice with one of the biggest Broadway producers and watch him build and promote one of the most successful shows, a show which is my favorite show to this day. I grew up
around... What is that show? What show is
it? It was Rent when it was on Broadway.
Oh my God,
And I later in life became an audition piano player for Rent when it was on Broadway, which allowed me to be full circle. And when I was bartending my way through college, little did I know at the time, I was working for this bar on Wall Street, which was like a stock brokery bar in the 90s. And our sister bar was a bar in Soho called the Moon Dance. Now, Rent fans will know what that place is, but if most of you don't, that was the place that was the day job of a guy named Jonathan Larson, who was the overnight counterman at Moon Dance. So when our bar closed and we went there for drinks, I would be sitting at the bar chatting with John, the overnight milkshake counter guy, not knowing, because this was before Rent was Rent, that he was Jonathan Larson, the Jonathan Larson who wrote Rent and you know, became this idol. So my connections to Rent throughout the course of my life are multiple and sort of...
Yes, magical.
Yeah. It's it was a very magical place for me. So these various outlets and connections helped me form not just a strong music sense, but a strong business sense of how to build my career as an artist. And so by the time I was in my 30s, I was working full time as a performer. And I had gone on a Carnival cruise as a guest with friends of mine. And we discovered the piano bar on board one night, and this was during spring break. And the long story short is my friends kind of pushed me up onto the stage when the piano player took a break, and the piano player was like, who are you? And my friends were like, let him play. He's good. Which every drunk person says open mic night ever. And this piano player was very gracious. He's like, all right, well, I'm going on break. Play two songs. So I sat down and I did my thing, and I finished my two songs, and I looked over my shoulder at the guy whose name was Eric, and he's sitting there with a beer going, keep going. No, it's great. Keep going. So the two songs wound up being about 45 minutes, at which point I had enough and I was done. And I came back the next day. And the next day he put me on for an hour and a half in the middle of my cruise. And at the end of the week, the music director and the cruise director stopped me and asked me who I was. And I told them that I was a performer. And they put me in touch with the Carnival Music Office in Miami. And I called them when I got home and they hired me on the phone. And then I started touring with Carnival for 4.5 years. I finished with Carnival, came home to New York right in time for when the first dueling piano bar was opening in New York. I went in for a cold audition and the owners met with me, hired me on the spot without ever playing the piano, just from our conversation.
Yeah.
And I asked them, what did they need from me? They said, oh no, we're opening in 3 days. You'll be playing at the opening. I said, oh, this Saturday. They're like, yeah, no, you're on this Saturday. Okay. And I came in Saturday night and it was me and 4 or 5 other guys for a sold out show. And I wound up staying there for about 4 years. And I became the entertainment director there. And then that venue closed in 2010. And when they closed is when I opened my own piano company, which is Shake, Rattle, and Roll Pianos, which is based here in New York. And over the last now 15 years, we've grown to become the largest piano entertainment company in the world. We work it's something we're very proud of. We work with over 125 performers a year. Since COVID, we do about 800 events a year around the world, mostly in the Northeast United States, but we're in 30 states across the US. Since COVID, we're in 7 countries. We do public shows, private events, corporate events, weddings. I've played for the President of the United States. I've played for A-list celebrities. We've played for heads of state. We've played for Fortune 500 companies. We've done marriage proposals for 2 people. We've done huge festivals for 40,000 people. We've done beer busts in the backyard. We've played, you know, the top of hotels. We've done, you know, it's anywhere people want to show, we go. And it's been a great ride so far. And our 15-year anniversary is actually 2 weeks away. It's Labor Day is when the company opened. So Labor Day weekend is our 15th birthday. And we've done shows here in the heart of New York City every Saturday night for 15 years. We've never missed a show. Even during COVID, we moved our show online. We turned our live show into a streaming TV show for 16 months. We kept the show alive for our supporters and customers and fans. We got new fans from all over the world who tuned in and discovered us from Israel and Brazil and Australia and England and Ohio and Florida and California and people who came to New York after COVID to come see us live. So that's who we are. And that's been the journey so far till now. As we speak, I have a show tonight in 4.5 hours. So literally, this is our busiest summer ever. And every year we keep growing and keep getting bigger and bigger. And it's been a blessing. The sky's the limit. You know, we just keep reaching for new goals each year. As we attain a new goal, we think of something even crazier that we think we'll never get to. And we just work towards it. That's always been how we do things. And, you know, knock on wood, so far we've been really fortunate. We've been lucky on some occasions, although I'm not a huge fan of that word. You know, we've worked really, really hard and we've set strong goals and we keep raising the bar for where we want to go next.
Amazing. Well, so then you say, wait, who is working with you?
So the we is this group of phenomenal performers. You know, when I started Shake, Rattle, and Roll, all I wanted to do was not work for anyone else anymore. That was it. Anyone who is a musician that works in the bar business, you know, now this is not true of all bar owners, and I don't want to make it as a blanket statement, but you know that there are bar owners out there that are less than reputable. There are some that are chemically dependent. There are some that are, let's call it, mischievous.
Same with comedy. They're out there.
Yeah, sure. In the comedy world, too. It's unfortunate, but anywhere that there's a lot of people consuming a lot of beverages and chemicals, you're going to find, unfortunately, some segment of the population that is less than above board. And I reached a point in my life where I didn't want to answer to those people anymore. I wanted to steer my own ship. I keep making ship metaphors. I'm sorry. I wanted to be in charge of where my own life went. And one of the truest things I was ever told is, you know, sooner or later, as an artist, you can't make excuses for what other people are or are not giving you. Eventually, you got to step up and produce your own work, whether it's theater, visual art, comedy, music, film, you know, whatever discipline speaks to you as an artist. Sooner or later, you got to take your life into your own two hands and make your own art. Now, whatever that means to you. So for me, you know, I'm not an original artist looking for a record deal. That's not my path. But I wanted to be in charge of my own shows. I wanted to be able to create a better, more viable future for me. So what that meant was, as a business plan, knowing that in 2010, since there were no viable performance spaces in New York that were brick and mortar, where I could do 20 shows a month for my show, the way there were for Dueling Pianos in the South, in the Midwest, in the Texas area where Dueling Pianos had started, down in New Orleans, in the Northeast, not so much. So my plan was, instead of one place that had 20 shows a month, I would find 20 places that would give me one show each. And if I could do that, my month was done. I was set, which means for me as a musical salesman, I just have to find a bar that wants to try this once.
Right.
Try it once. Bring my show in once. Look at the bar sales and tell me you don't want to do it again. You're unhappy. We part as friends. We go our way.
Right.
But you hire me. You pay me for a show. We bring in a crowd. We do the show. And then you look at the results. And within 90 days, I had more work than I could do. 90 days.
So 90 days. So that was 90 days of like, so you're basically, are you just calling every event? Like, what are you doing to actually make that happen?
Fortunately, it wasn't as much cold calling for me. I had a few things working for me. One of which is what you mentioned earlier, which was this sort of marketing sense. From the beginning of my career, I had built up a reservoir of contacts, not just as customers, but also as industry people. And this is important. You know, if you are an artist, I keep going back to this, do not neglect the business side of your craft. Build connections, grow those connections, water them, feed them, give them sunlight. Not just your customers, but on the booking and financial support and industry support side. So I had, in the New York area, built up contacts of industry people that had bars and restaurants and vineyards and breweries and casinos and whatnot. And I started reaching out and some of them started reaching out to me saying like, hey, we've heard about this Dueling Pianos thing. We want to give it a shot. Let's try it once. So while developing that idea of sending out the show to other venues, I also wanted to start producing my own show here in New York City. I knew it could be done. It had succeeded in every major city in America. There was no reason why New York couldn't have its own show.
Mm-hmm.
So we found a bar in Times Square that was about 90 seats that had no business on the weekends, none.
Mm-hmm.
It was in the shadow of Port Authority. It was this tiny little bar. And they had a stage and they had a back room that they weren't using. So I met with the owner and I hit him up and I said, listen, you give me the back room every Friday and Saturday. I will pay for the show. Marketing, advertising, sales, the cost of the show, I will bring in the show fully turnkey. You pay me for what I bring you. If customers are drinking, I get reimbursed for what my show cost. And everything I sell for tickets is mine to keep. And he said, great. I'm not making any money on the bar now. What do I have to lose? I said, listen, you have nothing out of pocket. If I don't make you sales, you don't pay me a dime. If I do, you cover my costs. He said, great. So this was around 2010 when social media marketing was still at its heyday. Companies like Groupon and Living Social were massive. I mean, this is 15 years ago when social media marketing was it. If you put a product on Living Social or Groupon, you could move hundreds of units, you know, in hours. Yeah. So I made a deal with both of those companies to sell tickets to my brand new show that had no reputation and no history.
So smart.
And they announced it, and we sold these $20 tickets for like $11 each. And we sold so many, we sold hundreds of tickets in a day. We sold so many tickets that we could sell out the show for the next 6 weeks, every Friday and Saturday for 6 weeks just on that.
Wow.
So I knew we were set. And then because I knew I had this support of lower price tickets sold, I put tickets on sale for full price on my website that I had just created. And then we started reaching out to discount theater sites, discount event sites. Again, all the little companies that were like trying to bite market share off of Groupon.
Yeah.
And they started reaching out to me once they saw our deal on there. They would sell our tickets too. So we had all these great little spider-webbed connections happening. And the show was sold out for a year.
Wow.
In this little 90-seat room, we were very, very quickly turning people away from our show, which was a pretty comfortable place to be.
Yeah.
So we were there for a year. And at the end of the first year, we moved down to Tribeca to a space that had 120 seats. So we were there for the next 4 years, and we were selling out that room by the end of the 4 years. So we moved to a bigger room in Madison Square Garden, and we just kept growing and growing and growing. And so today, our 15th birthday is coming. We're now at Chelsea Table and Stage in Chelsea, which is 165 seats. And we're there every Saturday, 52 weeks a year. We do brunch shows that we've now added since COVID at a great burger and brunch place in Times Square called Burgerology, where we have our own private showroom. That's where I was yesterday. So now we have two shows a week in the heart of Manhattan that are now self-sustaining and, you know, knock wood again. Obviously, since COVID and since the current political climate in America has dampened tourism. These are trying times for the arts and for tourism and travel. So we are finding our way through this new reality. But that's where the business part of show business comes in. You know, you make the decisions and you make moves to keep your show alive and keep the arts running and do what you have to do so that your showroom is full, so that you have an audience to play for every week and keep your art alive. By whatever means necessary you have to do, you make smart decisions and you perpetuate your craft.
Right.
And that brings me to today. That's where I am.
And then so when so now we're in a different social media environment, things are very much flooded.
Oh, yeah.
It's harder to get your message out. So what would you recommend if Mark was starting right now? If you were starting right now, what would you do, you think?
So, well, you know, we coming out of COVID had to take a good long look because the landscape is all different now. You know, everyone who's watching this knows, you know, the nature of social media has changed with the advent of podcasting, with the rise of TikTok and Instagram and the new wave of social media. So one of the things we've done is we are partnering with, and here's another word I'm really not fond of, but influencers.
Yep.
We're partnering with, young artists, young creatives who are making their mark in the social media space, people who are innovating in that world, in that tech world, which is not my world, even though in 2025, again, artists really do need to be social media savvy. You know, I'm not 22 anymore, so it's a changing landscape. So I've partnered with certain creatives in the social media space who really do know what they're doing and have built for themselves these 6- and 7-figure followings of people who really align with their message and their branding and their image. And that messaging aligns with what we do. So if, for example, there's a creative social media person or team out there that is posting about great events in New York or, you know, the fun artsy side of New York, well, that's someone I want to partner with. And we've identified some of those people and forged really great relationships where they can amplify our message and reach new audiences for me that I can't reach on my own.
Right.
So it's allowed me in my 15th year of producing this show to still find new corners to paint and new rooms to enter where I've got new customers and new eyeballs for my media and for my ticketing. And those partnerships have been invaluable for me. There are shows we've done where those partnerships have made all the difference between a full house and a near empty one. It's a constant reinvention for me.
Right.
In 2025, I'm here. I'm on this podcast today. Reaching new faces and new eyes and new ears because that's what it takes in this artistic landscape. It's finding new stones to turn over and new pathways and, you know, new conversations to have. You know, I try very, very hard not to sit still as a creative myself. You know, not to sit on my laurels because then you stagnate and you get lazy and you also fall behind the marketplace because coming up behind you is the next hungrier artist who will work extra time and extra hard and will do the things you aren't doing, and they will put in the time and the hours and the craft and the dedication and the devotion because they're hungry. You know, so I have to stay hungry. I have to stay on my toes and I have to stay present. And so it's helped me, you know, there's 24 hours in a day. You can't do everything. And even with a great team, we're always looking for the new opportunities and the new companies that are coming along that we think could be a great partnership opportunity. Oh, there's this social media team. There's this ticketing company. There's this singles company that maybe wants to do a singles event with us. You don't know where that next great, interesting, intriguing partnership idea is going to come from. And I'm always pleasantly surprised when, you know, we look in places we haven't thought to look before to find a whole new range of opportunity that allows us to grow our shows and our company directions, you know.
Right. And so are you just sitting there scrolling through like Instagram or TikTok trying to find people that you align with?
You know, sometimes if I'm in the office and I've got a few free minutes and there's nothing super pending on my plate, I may flip open social media and kind of, you know, see this person that I know and I'm like, oh, okay, what brands are like that brand, Instagram? Tell me who's like them that I haven't met yet. And then I might send out like a few little, you know, little messages like, hey, we don't know each other, but I like your brand. I like what you guys are doing. It seems like what you do and what we do could fill a similar need. If you think, you know, take a look at us. If you think what I think, let's have a conversation. Let's see what we can do together to help each other.
Right.
You know, the sky's the, I do I do some investigating and some like tentative mining on social media. I also do the same thing at in-person events. You know, nothing beats a good face-to-face conversation, even in 2025. So, you know, since COVID, we've become really active in a lot of the event planning and travel and tourism spaces here in the city of New York. And I go to a lot of those events. Before COVID, I didn't go to any. And now every month I'm going to a few so that we're in the room live, not just with industry tastemakers and decision makers, but the people in the political spheres of influence who are making decisions that affect our lives. I've gotten into positive relationships with critical members of our local New York City government, our state government, our federal government since COVID. And those conversations, those relationships have translated into tangible actions, tangible events, tangible
money.
That have gotten us work, that have put money in our bank account, that have helped us grow. There are conversations, real world conversations that I've been fortunate enough to have that got us hundreds of thousands of dollars since COVID that we would just have not had if not for actively building on those relationships in the political sphere, finding people with the levers of power and getting into the room with them and getting those conversations. What can we do for each other? It's not always about, hey, what can you do for me?
Right.
It's how can we help each other? And some of those interactions have led us to really great places. And just one little example is that coming out of COVID, we started a lot of conversations here locally with the city of New York, and they reinvigorated their travel and tourism sales program because during COVID, all of that shut down.
Right.
So when they did their first in-person travel and tourism sales mission a year and a half ago, it was to the United Kingdom and Ireland. And they sent over a sales team to meet with hundreds of travel and tourism, travel agents, event people to start booking trips to New York. And you know who they sent over as their entertainment to represent the city of New York? It was us.
Yeah.
It wasn't a Broadway show. It wasn't some big name pop star. It wasn't someone from the Metropolitan Opera or Carnegie Hall or Lincoln Center, all of which are huge New York brands. It was Shake, Rattle, and Roll Pianos. We're a scrappy underdog, but we were in the room with the right people, and they got to see what we do and who we are, and that we had at the time a 13-year history in New York.
Right.
And you know, they saw some value to an interactive entertainment brand, this great interactive city being what represented us.
Now, you guys are very New York. And then I guess, too, a lot of artists talk about like, all right, now I need to branch out and now I need to go on tour and move it to another city. And so you've moved your stuff to other cities. You've done shows all the place. How do you, in terms of like reaching a new, because you're talking about like a lot of like this, you know, on the ground stuff, you know, the marketing, the relationships take time. And then when you want to bring it to another city, how do you replicate?
Well, for us, it's a little easier than it might be for an individual artist, only because the individual artist is selling their performance. And that's tricky because there's only one of you or one entity, if it's a band or a group or a dance company or a comedy troupe, or there's one entity. So if you're in Boston this Saturday, you can't also be in Tampa. The laws of physics.
Yeah.
Now, for us, we're a vast network of performers, all of whom do great shows. Now, it may not be me, the individual, but they are still Shake, Rattle, and Roll. So we can do 8 or 9 shows across the country on the same day. So that gives us some strength. So if you're a comedy brand, that may mean like thinking the way Second City does and building other troops that align with your message, building relationships. There's always ways to grow your art. And in a tangent to that, I'll come back to your question in a second. A smart guy who happens to be my accountant, who has been with me since I started the company, said to me one day, one of the things I carry in my brain, which is, if all you ever have to sell is your own 24-hour day, that's not how you get rich.
Right.
If you ever want to retire wealthy, you need to sell more than your 24 hours, because that's all you get. You can't get a 25th hour to your day. You are capping what you can sell at the get-go. So you got to find other ways to monetize what you do. Having said that, going back, the reason it's a little easier for us, in addition to having this great resource of this massive network of phenomenal artists that we work with, once we built up our regional success here in New York, we were able to start advertising that success nationally so that the people in other markets, whether it's Ohio or Florida or New Hampshire, Denver, would start coming to us like, hey, could you do this where we are? Could you bring this to us? Well, yeah, we've got great artists we work with that are based in Ohio and Florida and New Hampshire and Denver. Mm-hmm. We can put this great show together in the town where you live. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't have to be me going out there for the meeting. We can still have a meeting in these great digital spaces so that they see what we're about. But growing our art, our craft outside our immediate region got easier for us because, one, we built a great reputation in our reviews, you know, our Yelp reviews, our Google reviews, our Facebook, you know, we have a lot of happy customers. So it's an easy resource for us to point to be like, all right, look at those reviews, hundreds of five-star reviews.
Yeah.
We stand behind our product. The same product that's killing it here in New York is going to do great for you in Michigan. We stand behind our reputation. You won't be disappointed.
So you think that's like, so when you bring the show on, when the show's going on the road, it's somewhere else. The thing is, you have huge like customer satisfaction that you think just sells the show.
It does. We recognized what our resource base needed to be. So, you know, selling a show, you need great customer relationships and reviews. And so new customers look to the third party review space to legitimize you. And when you're a show, that's really important. I don't care if you're Hamilton or the Mona Lisa or Shakespeare, you know, people want to know that you're worth spending their time and their money on.
Yep.
And that's one way to do it. You know, build up your store of, promotable assets. So for us, that's a lot of great videos. So at every show, we shoot footage. Every show, we shoot footage of our performers killing it in a sold out room of people smiling and drinking and singing and dancing. Because other people look at that and go, oh, okay, that's the show.
Proof. You're like, literally, you're going to come here and have this
reaction.
You're going
to be a part of this.
Right.
Like, it's not just me telling you it's fun.
Right.
Don't take my word for it. Look at the 500 videos we have that go back a decade. Like, we post new content every week. We post new content every week. So if you track our YouTube, our Vimeos, our the videos that are on our website, you know, you can go back years and see consistency of excellence. Our public shows get posted. We post some of our private events. We did more summer camp shows this year than we've ever done. That's a market we've expanded into this year. This year we did 15 summer camps. So I guarantee you next year we're going to be 20 or more, because now we've got these great promotable assets of hundreds of kids having a blast at our show. And now camp directors who don't know me and aren't sure if they can take a chance, I'm going to show them these three great videos we shot this summer. of other kids at other camps having a blast. They don't have to take my word for it now. We're going to grow that market in the next 12 months. And by summer of 26, my summer is going to be sold out with summer camps. That's my new goal for the year. So giving yourself whatever those promotable assets are that can sell your art, there is no price on it. There is no price on having the materials you need to sell your craft.
And how do you keep, so you've kept all, when you were talking about your contacts, what's your method to keep it organized? This is a very practical question because I've talked to a lot of people about, like, what do you do with your list? And everyone goes, my list.
Yeah. So I automated it really early on, and there's like monthly sites that you pay for.
Yep.
There comes a point in your life where, let me put it another way. Everyone on the planet lives the same equation, right? On one side of the equation is money, and on the other side of the equation is time. And when you're young, you have more time than money, and you trade your time for money. And when you get older, you have more money than time, and you trade money to get time for yourself. And to be successful, you just have to make that pivot. You've got to recognize that you have limited time in your workday, and you've got to trade your assets in return for more time for you, for your sanity, for your health, for your family, right, for your joy, but also to more smartly focus your work time on the things you need to do. Managing my mailing list, you know, I can automate that out to a company and pay them. And then every show I do, every show my team does, as I said earlier, we're collecting email addresses. So I allot some portion of my work week, usually on Monday, to all the email addresses for the week. We enter them into our system. We codify them by what region they came from, what venue they came from. So I know when I do marketing later to a region or a venue, at a touch of a button, I know which segment of my five-figure mailing list is going to be relevant to that show. We also do regular ongoing blasts once or twice a month. I centralized our entire mailing list on a website where they help me now, again, with 2025. There are all these great AI things you can do to build your little mailer so it looks nicer and more professional. It'll help you write your copy. It'll help you, bless you, it'll help you with your art and get pictures that are nice. And so I have streamlined over time. So I'll take a few minutes each week to update the mailing list of all the names we got that week. Right. And it just, that way it helps grow and stay healthy. And the mailing list site I use cleans out the dead names.
Right, right.
You know, it's all automatic. I don't have to worry about that stuff anymore.
Right. And then, so then are you even just like your industry contacts and everyone you're meeting? Because it seems like you keep on top of all of that. And is it a spreadsheet or is it the same? Is it a CRM you use?
So on the company's list I use, I have different breakout lists. I have my customer list, which is tens of thousands. I have my industry list, which is thousands. I have, now that I'm in the post-COVID world and I'm active in travel and tourism, I now have my own travel and tourism networking list, which is now hundreds and growing. I have my private party contacts, all the, not the companies, but individuals. I did this one's wedding. I did this one's birthday party, this baptism. We market to them for their holiday parties and their family celebrations. And there are families, listen, if you do their wedding and they love you, you're doing their anniversary too. Then you're doing their baby naming. And then you're doing the first birthday. And guess what's good about birthdays? They happen every year. And everyone has one. When you establish that great relationship, you're setting the table for an entire future. Again, this is business. You know, one of the things I tell my customers, which we're really proud of, is every time I meet the new customer and we pitch them for the first time, it's just this simple. I'm not looking for a date. I'm looking for a ring. It is that simple. I don't want to do one event for you. I want to do all the events you will ever need. And once you see that first event, you're going to want us to do all your events because you're going to love it so much. You're never going to want anything else again. Trust us, the first time you will never look anywhere else again.
Oh yeah.
You know, and it's true. I want every customer to come through the door and go out as a lifetime relationship. And that's how you build and that's how you grow. There are customers that met me on cruise ships, going back to the origin story, that have come to New York every year to see our show here, who have booked us to do their wedding, who bring us to their home every year, every summer to do parties for them at their house for an annual fundraiser. And all that came just because long ago on my solo show, you make every guest feel welcome and you make every experience special and you make every moment count.
And you capture their email and their email.
It's also remembering that every interaction at every level of artistry is not just creating your art. It's creating an emotional experience for the person who engages with it. So for me, where the art is music, it is not about performing a song. It is about creating an emotional experience within that song that resonates with the customer, with the guest, with the audience. Anyone can put on a show and play songs. Anyone. What not everyone can do is have your guests leave that experience changed in some way.
Hell yeah.
Looking back to that moment going, do you remember that? How funny that was, how touching that was, how special that was.
Right.
And those are the memories and experiences you carry with you for a lifetime. And I'm not saying every single person, but it's a game of numbers. It's a game of odds.
Yeah.
So those people who come and then feel that need later, there's a phone call, there's an email. Hey, we saw you at the such and such show. And now I have a company that wants a fundraiser. Now we have a year-end holiday party. My daughter's getting married. Do you do weddings? Hey, can you come to our house and play my mom's birthday party? Hey, I've got a group of 20. Yep. I'm going to bring them to your show. These things are branches on a tree, right?
Yep.
And every branch you water keeps growing. Every branch you don't,
right.
So it's up to you. How do you want your artistic tree to look?
I love it. So we have two questions we always ask people. We love to ask people their misfit moment. It's the moment that they knew that the traditional path was not for them.
Well, I told you mine already. Mine, I knew when I was 16, when I had that third open mic.
That was the thing.
That was it. Yeah. When I came off the stage, and this is true, you know, when I came off the stage that third Tuesday, back when I was 16 years old, the sound of the applause of a room full of people that enjoyed what we had made out of nothing changed me on some biological level. I was hungry to have that sound again, to have that feeling again. And I think it was worth more to me because we had worked so hard to get that third night. Because we'd failed twice, and I knew what that felt like too. And thanks to my good friend David, I didn't give up when I could have.
Mm-hmm.
The victory was so much sweeter. And I knew I didn't want to do it again. I had to do it again.
Yeah.
I had a biological need to get that dopamine in me again. And I never looked back. I knew at that moment I had to be on stage performing. That was my moment.
And we also have this. It's a misfit inspiration. Misspiration, if you will. It's when you're in the lulls, because, you know, there's highs and there's lulls. Like, you know, it can get low, low, low. So what do you do to, like, lift yourself up in those times?
Something that my grandfather once told me, and that my mother reinforced when I was younger. We all have setbacks, right? So we all, whether that setback is losing a job or, you know, whatever those things are personally, professionally, we all get knocked back. And something they told me kind of stuck with me, you know, which is just, you know, all right, when you're dealt these, and I'm not talking about massive life-changing, like actual loss of loved ones or things that really take time to heal from. I'm talking about the knucklehead parts of life, like when you get fired from a job, which hurts, but you're still alive and you're still well. Right. And you like those setbacks as an artist, when you lose a grant, when you lose the possibility, those things that we all experience that set us back two steps. You know, the thing they said to me was, okay, you get what's called one day of mourning, one day. And then you've got to wake up on day two and you've got to reattack your life. So what that meant to me was, you know, feeling loss is healthy, and feeling sadness and those sort of negative emotions, it's part of humanity. It's a healthy experience because you come out of that healed. So I give myself, when there's something disappointing and you just feel, you know, the rain clouds and the sort of gray that we all identify as artists, that sort of just like nothing's happy, woe is me, what have I done with my life? Like, you know, those questions, those doubts, I give myself a day, one day, to let all that stuff wash over me and to feel whatever I'm going to feel and to be miserable and be sad and be hopeless and desperate and all the worst stuff because this thing I really wanted and I didn't get it, or this whatever the bad thing was, one day. But when I wake up on day two, that's it. Put my pants on, lace up the shoes. No matter what how bad I want to feel, I sit myself down at the desk, I open the computer, and I figure out a plan. And to me, this may be different than most artists, but I think it's also something that's spoken to why I've been able to work well in the business space. My hero as a piano player, it isn't Billy Joel, it isn't Elton John, it isn't Stevie Wonder, it isn't Beethoven, it isn't Mozart, it isn't Gershwin, it isn't any of those guys, great though they are, and I love them all. My personal guidepost has always been P.T. Barnum. And I'll tell you why. As a human being, as a person, he was very flawed. You know, I'm not here to glorify bad choices that people have made. As a businessman, as a marketing entrepreneur and impresario, which is a word I love and is never used anymore, this guy was second to none. And there's a little sign I have in a drawer that says WWPTD. What would PT do? And I take it out whenever I have that day too. And I leave it on the desk until I've solved whatever the problem is that I have to solve. If it's a marketing problem, if it's a creative problem, if it's a sales problem, how do I fill the show that's empty coming up? How do I write the arrangement to this new song? How do I craft this new business? Whatever the problem, whether it's artistry or business, that I cannot figure out, how would P.T. Barnum solve this conundrum? Because he was a guy that took a crate of white salmon that no one could sell. Albino salmon. This is a true story. And P.T. Barnum said, okay, ladies and gentlemen, once in a lifetime, rare white salmon available now, one time only. He sold out of white salmon. The guy was a genius.
But he's the one that said, nobody knows nothing. Nobody knows anything.
He said, you know, he's the guy that said a fool and his money are soon parted. And there's a lot of great sayings that are associated with PT. But he was a guy who always took a problem that he couldn't solve and then just sort of turned it sideways and looked at it again, or looked at it from behind, or, you know, change your perspective on a problem. So for me, to go back to your question, day two, I am done crying. I am done feeling miserable. I'm done feeling sorry for myself. I had my pity party. That was yesterday. Now today It is about solving whatever this new problem that I've made for myself or that was made for me by others. Now I got to solve this. So focus. You let the emotions of negativity have their time. That's done. Now you attack the new problem. And if you can't figure it out, change your perspective. Get up and walk around. Look at the problem from a new way. For me, it's what would PT do? How would he solve it? And it has never failed me.
Wow.
It's just, you know, it's sort of a mantra of change your approach. If you're stuck in a rut, if you're stuck in the way of approach, if emotions and negativity are blocking your normal creative path, find a new way to look at it. Whatever that means to you, force yourself, because whatever you're currently doing isn't working for whatever reason, force yourself to change something, one thing, and attack it from that perspective and keep changing the things until a new path opens up, until the sun breaks through, you know.
I love that, because that base value with that, you're like, because I can do it.
Yeah.
You can. And most people who succeed, it's not because they're like some sort of crazy genius. They just tried harder. That's it.
Yeah, it's just
a lot of times.
And it's not always that you try harder. Sometimes you try smarter. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, it isn't always the heavy muscle that moves it. Sometimes it's just putting a lever in and doing that.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's trying smarter, and that could be the change you need to make. This sort of pushing the grindstone approach may not work this time. How can I get around the stone?
Right, right.
You know, lots of metaphors today.
Right. Yeah. It's just like, it's like the thing is like you, but even with that, like the smarter is that you're like, you believe that you can figure outable, which is what Marie Forleo says. Like it is, because I think sometimes you can get stuck if it's like, yeah, but it's never going to see, but yeah, you know, kind of like in that, but you have this, you don't really believe that you can.
Yeah. And, you know, listen, it's like, you know, the great science fiction book, Dune, fear is the mind killer. You know, those negative emotions that sometimes circumstances push us into, you know, there comes a moment where you got to push back. You cannot let those things get the best of you. You cannot dwell in those places. It's the death of artistry. So you know, you give those things their healthy space, and then enough's enough. And you will start looking for new angles, new avenues, new approaches. It can be very amorphous, but for me, it's never failed. You know, look for the new approach, look for the new way of solving that problem. Sooner or later, you'll find it. Change how you're attacking the problem. That's always what's worked for me.
Yeah. All right. Omar, I feel like I talked to you about business for hours.
This has
been great. Inspiring. I was inspired by you when I met you, and I'm continuing.
I remember.
Inspired. Yeah.
We had a long chat, you and I, about comedy a long ago, and look at you now.
Look at me now. Well, thank you. That's really sweet of you. I really appreciate that.
Awesome. Thank you for having me. This has been great.
Thank you. And I look forward to like just tracking you and seeing what you're up to, and continue to be enthralled by what you're doing.
Absolutely. You can come find us online, shakerattlerollpianos.com or srrpianos.com. We're every Saturday night, Chelsea Table and Stage here in New York City.
Heck yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much, Mark. There we have it. You can follow Misfits Making It on my social pages at Lauren Logie on all the things, Instagram especially, and also X Twitter thing and Threads and TikTok and YouTube Shorts and all the things. You can get updates and inside info by joining my email list at www.laurenlogie.com. Thank you to Ani Makutsian for editing, Edward Schilla at Radio Misfits Podcast Network. Thank you to Marine Asiant for our new music, and Maddie McLennan for making the podcast. And thanks to our listeners for bringing us back for another season. We'll see you soon.
The proceeding was a presentation of the Radio Misfits Podcast Network. Find our other great shows on iTunes, Stitcher Radio,
and at RadioMisfits.com. Thank you.
Thank you.